This is a foreign policy discussion that very much has a domestically rooted agenda.
Uno, dos, tres.
Hey, welcome to In the Thick. This is a podcast about politics, race, and culture from a POC perspective. I'm Maria Hinojosa.
And I'm Julio Ricardo Varela.
Joining us from Harlem is an all-star guest, Terrell Germain Starr, reporter with The Root. Welcome back, Terrell.
Hey, happy to be here.
And joining us from Washington, D.C. is a first-timer, Maria Peña. She's a reporter with La Opinion from Los Angeles. Hey, Maria.
Thank you so much for having me, guys.
So glad that you're with us. So this month, Julio and I have been doing a whirlwind of like some pretty intense and fabulous live recordings of In the Thick shows, people.
Yep.
Oh my God, we've already dropped the first two of our three live recordings from Chicago. Next week, we'll be dropping our live show from Boston, which we did last week.
Yep.
And I just gotta tell you, you know, In the Thick fans are amazing, Julio. And I think one of the things that we've come upon is that what we do at In the Thick, and certainly what we do in our live kind of salon settings, is we talk about really serious, serious stuff, but we also have fun.
I know. The best highlights of the last few weeks, to meet these In the Thick fans who actually, in Boston, for example, at the PRX Podcast Garage, it was a downpour. It was a thunderstorm, and people showed up. They're like the nicest, coolest people, and we laughed, and it was just...
Not like we're biased or anything like that.
No, no, they are. I don't care. Like, I love In the Thick fans.
So we need to catch up, and I've been needing to catch our breaths up on some pretty important stories. Last week marked 1 year since Special Counsel Robert Mueller was appointed by the Justice Department for the Trump-Russia investigation. Trump marked this moment with tweets basically saying that this is the greatest witch hunt in American history. And there's been a lot of news in recent weeks about the investigation, ranging from Trump officially recognizing a previously undisclosed payment of, get this, $100,001 up to $250,000 to his personal attorney, Michael Cohen, for reimbursement to a, quote, third-party related issued to the 2016 election. Oh my God. And then there was also the Senate Judiciary Committee releasing thousands of pages of material about the infamous 2016 Trump Tower meeting with a Russian attorney.
And if that weren't enough, then you have Sunday President Trump tweeting a demand that saying that the Department of Justice should look into whether or not the FBI DOJ had infiltrated or surveilled the Trump campaign for political purposes. And this is what he's saying. And if any such demands or requests were made by people within the Obama administration, exclamation point, then the DOJ Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, he quickly responded on Sunday to say, like, we're going to have to look into this. Trump's tweet was in response to a New York Times report on Friday that the FBI used an informant to investigate Russia ties to the Trump campaign, but not to spy, as Trump has claimed. I can't believe I'm saying all this, Maria.
I know, because, you know, I mean, at a certain point, it's just like it all becomes so over the top. So much. So, you know, for people who are not following it, so confusing. Maria.
He's going from tweets to action by formally demanding that the Department of Justice look into whether or not they, quote unquote, planted a spy or an informant in his campaign. What's significant about this particular formal demand is that it's the first time he's using his authority in office to counter the Russian probe since he fired James Comey as director of the FBI last year. You got to remember, though, that the FBI has an obligation, or at least had an obligation back in 2016, to investigate whether or not any foreign governments were trying to influence U.S. elections. And so far, at least as I've been following this, there is no evidence that the FBI planted an informant or a spy. You know, the president can say whatever he wants. He can be angry. He can tweet all he wants. Now, you know, Giuliani, the president's attorney, has said that supposedly the FBI wants to wrap up the probe by September 1st to not influence the midterm elections, as long as the president agrees for, you know, a sit-down interview. Mueller's office has never made any comments about the ongoing probe.
So, Terrell, one thing that is clear is that the president has switch the narrative, right? Now we're all talking about that as opposed to the revelations about Russia. Not only Russia, but everything that's broken. What's your sense of what this is all about?
We are seeing the unfolding of the authoritarian leader that the American people chose to lead the country.
You know, we're not hearing authoritarian.
But that's what he is. All the actions that we are seeing pretty much are reminiscent of authoritarian states. The suppression or the doubt of the integrity of the media, the doubting and the interrogation on the validity of the prosecutorial forces or entities within the country. If you look across Eastern Europe, if you look across the continent of Africa, across Asia, South America, authoritarian leaders throughout history have first, in order to cement their power, question the institutions that they claim to protect and vow to uphold. So this is what you're seeing. And what's most important is that the people voted for this. So the real question that you have to ask yourself is the democracy that the Robert Mueller investigation is supposed to defend is a democracy that the Americans care about even less. Because if you really look at it, if you look across history,
yeah,
just take Hitler, for example.
Oh, just toss Hitler out.
No. Let's be really specific here, right?
So Let's go there.
It was not the German people who took down Hitler. It was a war.
Whoa.
When you think about Mussolini, you think about all these individuals, it was not necessarily the general consensus that took it down. If you look at the civil rights movement here in the United States, across all racial spectrums, it was not necessarily a general consensus that people said, we are fed up with this racism. We are fed up with this xenophobia. It was some entity within the government that said this was not enough. It was the DOJ, right? It wasn't that white people across the country were so upset with the KKK. Department of Justice, FBI, a lot of entities kind of shut them down in many respects. Of course, there are activists who are working on the behalf, right? And so I want to be careful about that. But what I'm saying is that when you're looking at this probe, we ultimately have to ask ourselves, in the grand scheme of things, who is this probe ultimately protecting? It's the American people. What segment of the American people feel that this probe is erroneous? It makes no sense, right? And so when Trump is speaking that we're going to investigate the FBI, the DOJ, he's speaking for the people. We have to really look at it that way.
Yeah, I was going to say, it depends on who you ask, because it's become so partisan. You know, for those of us that are in sort of the Washington bubble, you know, sometimes we fail to understand that, you know, people don't realize how strong it is here in Washington when you have Trump throwing red meat at his base as opposed to being a president of all people. When you look at the polls, of course, you see that he still has a strong support among people who voted for him. But, you know, when you zoom out, you see that that support is not there when it comes to the general electorate. So I would argue that he's not doing it to protect Americans. I think he obviously is upset that this has gone on, that there's this, you know, suggestion that he got help from Russia to win the election.
Right. I'm sitting here absorbing all this. But then we got to move on to the other story, you know, after Trump's comments calling undocumented immigrants not people and calling them animals. I don't know if you guys saw this yet, the latest White House press release about, and I'm quoting, what you need to know about the violent animals of MS-13.
Jesus.
Okay, we need to be talking about what's going on with Trump's administration and the whole immigration issue. You know, when Terrell's talking about government of the people, like, this is the House of the People sending out a press release about this. And, you know, let's be real about this. You have people like, for example, that Border Patrol agent in Montana who approached two women speaking Spanish, both U.S. citizens, in a gas station. And one of the women recorded the Border Patrol agent. And that's the only way you found out about it. And also this lawyer in New York City freaking out when he was ordering lunch in New York because, gasp, people were speaking Spanish in Midtown Manhattan during the lunch hour. I mean, there really is this dangerous climate towards immigrants and Latinos, regardless of your status, whatever you are. So, Maria Peña in D.C., What do you think about all this?
Well, you know, a lot of people asked me when I was in Jerusalem last week about how immigrants are being treated. More than half my life, I've been in the U.S., and I got to be frank with you, I have never seen such hatred and vitriol against immigrants as I have now. I mean, some people argue that we are going through another nativist cycle in U.S. history. When you look at the language of dehumanization, it has often been used as a license to kill or even destroy opponents.
I think, as I said on MSNBC, you know, when I hear these kinds of comments, I'm like, do we need to, you know, all bold, full caps,
yeah,
you know, New York Times, Washington Post, front page, we reject the president using animals to refer to human beings of any type? Mm. Or am I being overly sensitive?
No, of course you're not being overly sensitive. I want to go back to the specific word that was used, nativism. There has never been a period in America where nativist ideology has not ceased to exist.
That's me preaching.
That never took place. And the reason, and so when we see the lawyer who makes these racist statements about Spanish speakers, the only difference between how we see it is that people have phones. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so this has always continued. There has always been a nativist mentality towards Spanish. As far as I'm concerned, there is no reason why Spanish shouldn't be a second language in the United States. But there has always been a nativist, or more specifically, a white centered outlook of how the American public and the fabric of this nation should be. When you go back to the New York Times or any other mainstream publications, we have to remember that the construct of these institutions is predicated on this ridiculous notion of objectivity. So they can't say, for example, that President Trump is a racist. They must report that people think that he is a racist. So that's an ideological bend that's very germane to legacy media. Obviously, one of the reasons why we have In the Thick is that we know that's complete BS.
I was going to say legacy white male of super rich wealth legacy.
Right. And so we have to call a thing because that thing is consequential to who we are as human beings.
And the stories that are being told about us and by whom.
Yes, exactly. And one of the things that we all have to keep in mind when we talk about these issues is that we are consumers of news. Our job is to disseminate information, to gather it, and to present it to the public. This is not just a story for us. This is our lives. And I think that when we ultimately look at this recent spat of news, does it matter that we are hearing more about Trump's racism? Does this recent press release from the White House matter? I think ultimately, as it pertains to his supporters, it is inconsequential because he is fulfilling their white supremacist fantasy.
Hey, this is Julio, and we love reading reviews from our listeners. And guess what? We love sharing them with you as well. Here's one great review from a new Apple Podcast listener. I feel like I'm talking with friends when I listen to you. I nod my head, I laugh, I swear, I learn. I appreciate your honest perspective. Peace be with you. Totally love that review. And if you're a fan of In the Thick, try our sister podcast, Latino USA. This week on Latino USA, of bloodlines and conquistadors. Hispano is an identity unique to New Mexico and Southern Colorado. It defines people who consider themselves to be descendants of the Spanish conquistador. Hispanos have lived side by side with the pueblo for centuries, mixing cultures, identities, and even bloodlines. But recently, tensions have risen between the two groups over Santa Fe's annual conquistador pageant, known as La Entrada. Subscribe to Latino USA wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, we're back. You're listening to In the Thick. I'm Maria Hinojosa, and with me is my co-host, Julio Ricardo Varela. This week, we're joined by Terrell Germain Starr and Maria Peña with La Opinión, a first-timer. Let's jump back into the conversation. This is very difficult for us to even have to talk about because there's one thing with the words that this president uses, but the truth is that it's words that then move policies.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, you know, we now know that reports last week came from the Defense Department communications department basically saying that the Trump administration is getting ready to hold immigrant children on military bases.
Mm-hmm.
Now, by the way, this is not the first time, right? So we have to go back to, okay, President Obama used military bases, mm-hmm. which his wife did not go visit those children, neither did the president, go visit those children. So I'm going to hold them accountable for that. Mm-hmm. But President Obama did do this in 2014. There's an added element of a policy when you have a president using terms like this one to refer to the immigrants that, and the immigrant children that he's not going to be able to hold. Right, Maria?
I got to share with you an anecdote from last week. So Secretary Nielsen, the DHS secretary, she was at a hearing at on a Senate committee defending the budget quest for fiscal year 2019. And so there were two or three of us that hung out after the hearing, and we walked with her down the hall. And I asked her directly, how are pregnant women a threat to public safety? And she looked at me and she said,
"How is she a danger to public safety?
She should go to a port of entry and then she won't be breaking the law."
And then a separate question about unaccompanied minors.
You told the senator that you want to change the way they're handled. What did you mean by that?
I want to make sure that they're being given to a legitimate custodial relation or somebody who does not tend to do them harm. Unfortunately, we've seen examples of smugglers, traffickers, abusers, gang recruiters take children as if they were their own. They're not. So we want to protect the children always.
Secretary, you know, well, she said that the administration is actually trying to protect these kids from human traffickers. So what she's basically saying is that in the name of protecting them from human traffickers, they are also detaining and separating them from their parents. I found that really galling, but that's basically one of the talking points that you get out of Washington, out of the DHS folks.
Yeah. So, you know, when we've been doing all these shows, one of the things that we have also need to focus on, and I feel very strongly that we have to focus on this, and this is one of the reasons why we brought you on the show, Maria Peña, because you were actually on the ground as a reporter for La Opinión. Mm-hmm. And this is what happened with the Israeli-Palestine conflict last week, which basically, before the royal weddings and before Trump tweets, like, it was the top story of the week internationally.
Yes.
So for context, it marked the 70 years since Israel became an official state. But Palestinians, they marked this anniversary with over a month of protests for what they call Nakba. And that's a translation to
catastrophe, yes.
Mm-hmm. Right? Or when Palestinians fled or pushed out of their homes. So these protests ended in the death of over 50 Palestinian protesters, journalists, and medics. And over 1,000 other people were wounded by the Israeli Defense Force, also known as the IDF. Mm-hmm. Now, if people can remember when they opened up the U.S. Embassy in Jerusalem last week, there was a split screen of Ivanka Trump and other U.S. politicians cheering for that embassy in Jerusalem, while miles away in Gaza, there were Israeli soldiers essentially shooting at protesters and people were dying. Mm-hmm. So, Maria, you were there last week in Jerusalem.
Yes. Like,
you went out there. And you were covering some of the openings of the embassies. Before we get into sort of like what actually you reported on, there is still a lot of context to discover here in terms of the conflict. Without getting too much in the weeds, what are the basic roots? Why are we here? Why are we here with this conflict right now, Maria Peña?
The reason why there was a huge outcry about President Trump declaring or recognizing Jerusalem as the capital of Israel and therefore moving the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem last Monday is that, you know, Jerusalem is sacred to all three major religions, you know, the Muslims, the Jews, Christians. And so there was a UN resolution when the Israeli state was created in 1948. And the resolution says that the status of Jerusalem is going to need to be negotiated as part of a peace agreement, that it needed to be decided by the people involved directly in the conflict. But by having the U.S. insert itself into this controversy, of course, it inflames passions, because basically what the U.S. is saying is that Palestinians' opinions don't matter. And that here they are, you know, they're going to come in and establish the embassy in Jerusalem, you know, even when the status of the city has not been defined.
So, Terrell, the way in which this conflict is being reported by the mainstream media, I love the way that you always kind of pull back and give us what is the raison d'etre of the narrative in particular. What do you think about the way that this story is being reported and what's actually missing that can help us understand this moment?
We have to be mindful of who they're talking to. Everyone has an audience. Let's be mindful of that. And so as it pertains to the issue of Jerusalem, What is the missing element here? The missing element is that this is a foreign policy discussion that very much has a domestically rooted agenda, which is white evangelicals who voted for President Trump, 3 out of 4, support this president and supports this move. This is who he is talking to. Mm. When you hear Trump saying all these negative things about Muslims, about Latinos, because he went particularly hard for the Latinx. Am I pronouncing correctly?
Latinx.
Latinx and people who consider themselves to be Muslims. That's who he's after. So this move in Jerusalem, it wasn't about this conflict. It was about satisfying a very domestic element of this country who are white evangelicals who believe that Jerusalem belongs in the hands of Israel and that it is a larger part of global white supremacy. That's what it comes down to. Mm.
And amidst all this, right, not only the embassy in Jerusalem that was a U.S. embassy, Guatemala and Paraguay have moved their embassies to Jerusalem.
Paradigms of democracy.
And it's important to understand, you know, like we've talked about, Jerusalem straddles the border of Israel with the West Bank. So that, you know, it's pretty much the epicenter of this entire conflict. But Maria Peña, you actually covered the opening of the Guatemalan embassy.
Yes.
What's the connection with all this? Because Terrell's bringing up the religion aspect, but I'm so intrigued by these two Latin American countries that are like, okay, we're going to go open embassies too in Jerusalem. We're going to follow the United States. So what's the connection?
Well, it's really interesting because, you know, you got to hear the official statements coming out of the Guatemalan president last week. Their embassy is actually a tiny office in a huge building out the south side of Jerusalem. And the funny thing about it is that Guatemala was the first Latin American country to recognize the state of Israel. And it's now the first Latin American country to move its embassy to Jerusalem. So I guess they have a knack for, you know, wanting to be the first this and the first that. Their claim is that this is going to strengthen bilateral relations and specifically economic relations between the two countries. We also know that the U.S. government is lobbying Honduras to follow in its footsteps as well. You know, the U.S. government just got rid of the TPS for Honduras. So it'll be interesting to see whether Honduras decides to move its embassy, despite the fact that the U.S. turned its back on Honduran immigrants here in the States. But what I wanted to mention that was really important about last week, you know, and the violence, 62 Palestinians were killed in those protests in Gaza, including an 8-month-old baby who inhaled tear gas. I had an exclusive with the U.S. ambassador, David Friedman. He was at an event hosted by the White House Office on Faith, you know, initiative. Mm-hmm. And there were, you know, a lot of evangelical leaders at the event as well. And I asked him about, you know, how do you respond to charges that the U.S. is insensitive to Palestinians and their needs? You know, he blamed the violence on Hamas, you know, which is the ruling government in Gaza. This is the U.S. ambassador talking to us last week.
The U.S. cares very deeply about improving the lives of the Palestinian people. We've never had an issue with the Palestinians, just the opposite. We spend a significant amount of time thinking about it, and we spend a lot of money trying to help it. We need to think more about building, constructing infrastructure, education, roads, hospitals, tearing down barriers to coexistence, working with faith-based leaders to try to unite around our common beliefs, our common faith in God. I think we can do great things. We have to turn from an environment of hatred, a glorification of violence, into a more peaceful and loving relationship, and we're very much ready to do that.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, you see a lot of violence unfolding now after the event. Are you concerned about the violence continuing this week? There's already almost 60 dead.
Look, we're heartbroken by the loss of life. Every life is precious. Every Jewish life is precious. Every Palestinian life is precious. Every life in the world, that's in my DNA. That's the president's view. We're really heartbroken by the loss of life, but we also need to understand the causes. I mean, the causes are, unfortunately, a very cynical terrorist regime in Gaza that throws impressionable young kids into harm's way. And, you know, every country has to defend its border, and it's really, as I said, heartbreaking. We want to end the cycle of violence, and we're working on it very hard.
What I was taken by, you know, when he said that to me is that there was absolutely no need for the kind of violence that erupted and that resulted in 62 Palestinians being killed and more than 2,000 people injured. Because the thing is, if they really wanted to disperse the crowd, and by the way, there were about 40,000 Palestinians protesting at the Gaza border, no one has said anything about why they used live munitions, live fire.
Okay, so we're going to move on to our final segment. We're going to do what's missing. What story are you kind of obsessed with and you just feel like it's missing from the coverage? Terrell?
Well, I'm concerned with how Americans understand nuclear policy.
Whoa.
So okay. We're thinking about North Korea and the Iran deal, right? So let's go to the Iran deal.
Yeah.
The philosophy behind it is very simple. The reason why the deal is so technical is because ultimately, if the United States must get into a conflict with Tehran, the idea is we would rather fight a conventional war with Tehran than a nuclear one. That is it. That is the whole thesis behind this deal. With this deal being scrapped by President Trump, he opens up the possibility of Tehran resuming its nuclear program, even though there are positive signs that they're not interested in doing it because the Europeans are still trying to, you know, negotiate with Tehran. But that's the idea. We Americans are invested in this notion of fake or artificial security. There is no way that you can stop a nuclear war. There is no Star Wars defense system out there that can prevent a nuclear warhead, be it from Iran or be it from North Korea, from stopping us.
Yeah.
But then I think that we have to have a deeper conversation about what does it mean to feel safe in this country, focusing around nuclear weapons. So that's what I'm really concerned with.
Mm. Wow. That was,
okay.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Maria Peña.
Well, I wouldn't say that no one else is reporting on, but I think La Opinión has been leading this effort in terms of trying to understand what, you know, immigration enforcement means for you as citizens. You know, remember, there's a lot of, you know, thousands, hundreds of thousands of mixed status families that are impacted by immigration enforcement actions from this administration, not just people who crossed illegally yesterday, but also, you know, U.S. citizens that are married to undocumented immigrants who have U.S.-born children. You know, that's one area that we are following more than any other mainstream media because it is impacting U.S. citizens as well. What I wonder from my perspective in Washington is there's all this talk about how the immigration system is broken, and yet, you know, both on the right and the left, you know, Republicans and Democrats, they don't get their act together. There's a lot of bills out on the floor that haven't been even debated on. I know that there's an effort going on this week to try to force a vote on immigration, specifically the fate of Dreamers, the fate of DACA. I'm wondering about what's going to happen to that because, like I said, for all the talk about how the system is broken, no one's lifting a finger to fix it.
All right. Well, thank you for that. And thank you, Maria Peña from La Opinión. And thank you, Terrell Germain Starr with The Root. We're so glad that the both of you joined Julio and me this week on In the Thick.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you. Appreciate being here.
I'm Maria Hinojosa.
And I'm Julio Ricardo Varela.
Uno, dos, tres.
Thanks to Maria Peña for sharing her reporting with us on In the Thick. The audio is courtesy of La Opinión and Impremedia.
And remember, my dear listener, go to Apple Podcasts to rate and review us because it really does help. Mm-hmm. Also, you know, following us on Twitter and on Instagram at In the Thick Show also helps. And when you hit that little like on Facebook, well, we love that.
We do.
This week, let's see, you've got to tell your local grocery or bodega. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, totally.
You walk in and you're listening to us and you're like, hey, can I just show you what I'm listening to? Nice. Our producer is Stephanie LeBeau. Our associate producer is Nicole Rothwell. Futuro Media's executive director is Erica Dilday. Our theme music is Comencemos by Jungle Fire. The music that you heard is courtesy of Nacional Kep and ZZK Records. We'll see you next time on In the Thick. Hasta la próxima.
Nos vemos. President Trump.